Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We have a lot to share today, from the latest on how to protect yourself from prostate cancer, and what is the role of chlorella in improving immunity, and how egg yolks can be as bad as smoking for atherosclerosis, and something called yeast beta-glucan. It's very important. I'll tell you why, and a lot more on health and healing. And then we're going to take on some very in-depth issues. We'll continue with part four of our series about looking at the world we live in. What are some of the issues that are affecting us, but we're not analyzing them with any depth, with two professors, Camille Paglia and Jordan B. Peterson. She is one of the most brilliant minds. She talks very fast, and she accents almost every other word with okay, okay. But set that aside, you're hearing one of the finest minds that we have to draw from. And we also have Jordan Peterson. He is a psychologist, a professor. He's a deep thinker. He looks at archetypes from the past of how we can learn what we're doing right or wrong today. And he is a controversial figure. He is challenged by many in the, let's say, the identity politics community because he just doesn't buy it. And he had the courage to stand up. Now, right or wrong, agree or disagree, we should have open, civil discussion with various inputs from people. Then we, the people, can decide what we want to support or not. But to censor these people, as they have been censored, to close down any dialogue with them, then how are we supposed to know if what we're believing in is right or wrong? Also, I believe all reasonable and responsible human beings would really like to see peace in the Middle East, especially among the Palestinian and Jewish population. It is my contention they both should be able to live in peace and harmony. And that is not the case, and it hasn't been the case for a long time. Well, Abby Martin went over there to Israel, and she went to the West Bank, as well as going into the most popular parts of Israel, and to talk with people. She talked with one Palestinian, or a Jew, no Palestinians. She only spoke with Jews, but only one would be considered a liberal Jew or progressive on the issue. All the other people you're going to hear are staunchly pro-Zionist. And it's important that we hear their voices, not to condemn them, but rather to understand their perspective, because they are leading the popular support for the Netanyahu's right-wing Likud party and their efforts to deal with the Palestinians in their own way. Now, because she did this mini-documentary, it's only 22 minutes long, she has been condemned and attacked mercilessly, and mainly by the different AIPAC and Jewish support organizations. Is it fair? Was she objective? Because when I heard what she had to say, I didn't hear her posturing a single challenge to anyone. She was simply doing what a reporter spoke to, that is, ask appropriate questions and then listen, not make comments. So why are people afraid of what she has to say? That will be a segment where we're allowing you an opportunity to call in and share your points of view. Whatever they are, this is an open forum. And any point of view can be considered relevant because we can understand what you support or what you challenge. And our talkback number is 888-874-4888. By the way, we've gotten a lot of good response on this series with Paglia, and Peterson. There's one more in that series. So that's where we're going today. And also remember, 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, noon Eastern Standard Time, and Tuesday at 7 p.m. for the Progressive Commentary Hour. If you're not near a land-based station, what we call terrestrial station, to turn on your radio. If you're not near your internet, where most people listen to this program, you can always take any telephone, cell phone, or any portable device, and you can call a number and listen in. Let me give you that number, because you never know, for whatever reason, that might not be connected that day to your station. 424-203-8046. Listening live, 424-203-8046. But the vast majority of people don't listen to this program live because they're working and they're out and about, traveling, so they listen at night. Here's the number to call in. You can download up to 5 different programs with one phone call. Please write this down. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And of course, now on all cell phones, they have an app store, and we have our own app, PRN.FM. And that way you can hear the program crystal clear anywhere you get your cell phone. Let's begin by taking a look at a study. This was a study published in the European Journal of Nutrition. And they're looking at what is called beta, B-E-T-A, glucan, G-L-U-C-A-N. And it comes from yeast, and what it does is very good. It increases your body's ability to fight pathogens and showed a 25% better record of cold fighting than a medication. So it's easy to get. You can get it in any health food store, and you take it as directed. And you don't take it all the time. You merely take it when you find yourself coming down with something. It's also good for people with asthma as well. So again, it can increase your cold-fighting potential and flu-fighting potential by 25%. A single nutrient, non-toxic, beta-glucan. Also, a lot of people eat eggs every day. In fact, most Americans do. They're either having eggs with bacon and toast, coffee, that's the average American breakfast, or some sugar-coated cereal, a highly refined carbohydrate, generally corn or wheat, in which case then they only have milk on it and add additional sugar. Not very healthy, not healthy at all. In fact, it's all disease-producing. But a new study from the University of Western Ontario, published in the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis, challenges the egg yolk, the yellow part of the egg. So the newly published study, led by Professor David Spence of the university, that's in Canada, shows that eating egg yolks accelerates atherosclerosis in a manner similar to smoking cigarettes. They reviewed 1,200 patients and found that those who regularly consumed egg yolks is 2/3 as bad as smoking when it comes to increasing buildup of the carotid plaque. Now, when you have carotid plaque, that goes in your carotid arteries, and that's the artery that feeds down your neck that feeds your brain. And most people aren't aware that it's increasing in thickness and being clogged. And the first time they know they have a problem is with a stroke or a heart attack. I remember once back in, I believe it was around 1990, I was down at the Tri-State Healing Center where I went every day. And there we helped, probably 4,000 to 5,000 patients. We had the highest success rate of helping improve or cure patients of any place that I could check in America. We reversed AIDS in 12 out of 12 people, treated 1,200, but those 12 wanted to go to an accelerator program where they were there 6 days a week for 4 hours for free, and helped people with breast cancer, dementia, Alzheimer's. And I had a medical team working there, board-certified physicians, and holistic, and that's where Dr. Elmire Gadol was originally, great holistic dentist. In any case, What I found one day was a man came upstairs. No, he didn't come up. He couldn't make it up one flight of stairs. His wife came up and said, could you talk with my husband? I said, sure, bring him in. Well, he can't make it up the steps. So I went downstairs and we sat on the stoop of the building for about 2 hours. His name was Ed Finkelstein. His wife is Dolly Finkelstein. And she was the head of nursing. She taught nursing. And he was an engineer. And the daughter sitting in the car was a medical doctor. Not very friendly, I might mention. In any case, he said, look, he said, I have a blocked carotid artery, 97% blocked. And at my age, they say that there is a 15 to 20% chance I'm going to die on the operating table. And then there's a higher chance that I will die within 3 months post-operation. He said, I do not like those odds. So before I do that, is there anything that could be done? They say no. What do you say? And I say, well, I never tell people not to do what their doctor says. That's not my role. But I will tell you that you can break down plaque in the body, in the brain, and in the arteries, and especially the carotid artery. And so he said, okay, I'm willing to try it. And I put him on a protocol, and over a period of 6 months, he was able to gradually open up that carotid artery until the day came when the doctor said you no longer require that operation. But then he was one of those wonderful human beings who decided to go further. And in one day he came in the office and he said, you asked me something on our first meeting half a year ago. You asked me, how healthy do you want to be? And I couldn't answer that. And so I want to be as healthy as a 75-year-old can be. And I said, fine. I gave him a protocol. Because you help a person based upon the degree that they're willing to help themselves. It does no good to give a huge protocol to someone with major changes if they're not willing to do it. Then they just don't do anything. But he did it all. And during that period of time, his wife came in once, and she had just developed a very, very severe virus in her face and Bell's palsy, and it pulls down the face and almost closes the eye. And you can live with that forever. There's no cure within medicine. And I suggested that she undergo a protocol, and within 2 weeks, her Bell's palsy was reversed completely. Well, now she became more aware of what was possible, so she started to work with her husband. The two of them worked together. Wonderful couple, very loving, very positive. They went on, so he completely reversed his carotid artery buildup. They started running together in the park with the Natural Living Running Walking Club. And within a year, they were voted Outstanding Athletes of the Year by the New York Run Runners Club, then Outstanding Athletes by the U.S. Track and Field National. He even beat the Olympian, Corbett, in a race. And then by the Metropolitan Athletic Congress that represents about 40,000 competing athletes in New York. And that's not a popularity vote. That's based upon how against national times modal races. They were racing every week. And for the next 5 to 7 years, they were the top athlete in their age group, in effect reversing their aging process. So to the people here who said egg yolks are bad and they can give two-thirds as bad as smoking for increasing carotid plaque, they're right. But reversing that is more than just not eating eggs. It's going on a protocol of a plant-based diet, exercising about 400 minutes a week, ideally, doing stress management, and taking the appropriate supplements that clear your arteries. Like lecithin, you can have lecithin from sunflower seeds, if not soy, by looking at high-dose vitamin C. Also L-carnitine, PPQ. NAD, cayenne. Cayenne is one of the best things most people are not aware of. They'll eat something that's hot with a meal. Well, that's the cayenne. But if you take a capsule of 40,000 heat units in the morning, one in the afternoon, one at night, you're really increasing your circulation to the brain, to the extremities. That's going to help you. You're helping to clean up the arteries. It heals. turns off pain throughout the body, one of the best things we do, and a full complex vitamin E supplement, having all four tocotrienols and all four tocopherols in natural form, 400 units twice a day. And then, of course, ubiquinol and coenzyme Q10, 1 to 500 milligrams a day. Sorry if you missed that. I was just talking about chlorella and why it's so important. And it's very good, this algae. And we're getting the photosynthesis benefits, but it's natural chelator. And if you take vitamin E and folate, and you're getting rich iodine from seaweed and potassium and iron and magnesium and calcium, but it's great for improving memory, improving immunity, and helping us. That's the latest on chlorella, important nutrient. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to a clip. We're going to take a music break and come back, and we're going to go right into part four of two professors, Paglia and Peterson, and they're talking about issues that we don't have in-depth, intelligent conversation. We have reactive ideological comments on, where people don't listen to anyone. They don't entertain or open any idea coming into them. And we should listen to what they have to say, little gems throughout. Also, today I was going to do a major original investigative report. However, after our discussions with a whistleblower yesterday from Wikipedia, showing that once you're on Wikipedia, if they don't like you, they go against their own rules. That's what he said. In other words, they don't allow any biased input. And yet, all the people, myself included, who have targeted up there, we can't take our profiles down and they won't change them. Well, we got all kinds of people calling afterwards who said, me too, meaning they also work inside major, I won't name the organizations, but let's just put it this way. We have a whole lot more to add to our article firsthand from people who work in organizations that want to tell us the truth. They were afraid to before, but now that this man's come forward, other people in social media platforms have besieged my office. Now we're running checks to see if they're credible or if they're agent provocateurs, if they're plants, if they're on a fishing expedition from one of these organizations. So we're telling them nothing. We're checking their veracity, their background, and we have resources to check the authenticity of their background. So we're now going to take an extra several days before we make our final presentation with new information. And if there are any people who work in a social media platform who wish to tell us the truth about what they're up to, how they're doing, what they're doing, especially unethical, immoral, or illegal, you can go to prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. Don't call the office. From what I understand, our phones were nonstop busy yesterday because people were calling. Send us the information about yourself and about a brief overview of what you want to share with us, and then we'll see about getting back in touch with you. Now, we're going to take a break and come back and hear some really interesting minds. Please stay with us.
scorns. And just last night, okay, I was watching an episode, all right, where the women were at each other, okay, at a party and all, in recounting, but I said this to you, but you said this to me, and you're like, and the men got together there and said, well, this is the way they communicate, you know, with each other, and you know, men, we men, okay, just we'll have a fist fight, and 10 minutes later, we're going to have a beer at the bar next to each other, and so on, and I have observed that my daughter
used to be really irritated about that because she like most people was the target of feminine conspiratorial bullying at one. She's no pushover, my daughter, so this it wasn't like this was a continual thing or that she didn't know what to do about it, but she'd observe these girls conspiring against her and then blackening her name on Facebook, which is part and parcel of the typical female bullying routine, which is often reputation demolition, right? That there's a good literature on that. And then she'd watch what would happen if my brother or my son would have a dispute with his friends, you know, and maybe they were drinking and there was a dispute. They'd have a fight and then the next day they were friends again. And that's another thing that's strange is that like men have a way of bringing a conflict to a head and resolving it, right? And that it isn't obvious to me that women have that same, perhaps you might call it a luxury, but it's also the case that men don't know what to do when they get into a conflict with a woman, because what the hell are you supposed to do, you know? Mostly what you're supposed to do is avoid it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've seen, I don't know whether this crosses into other countries, but that there's a certain kind of taunting and teasing that men and boys do with each other that toughens them, okay, and where they don't take things seriously. But a girl's feelings become extremely hurt if she hears something that is very tough, you know, sarcastic against her. So I do feel that there are profound differences between the sexes in terms of emotions, in terms of communication patterns. My father used to say that he could never follow women's conversations. He said women don't even finish sentences. The women understand immediately what the other woman is saying. Okay, the way women tend to be more interested or have been traditionally more interested in soap operas, it's not just that the women were home without jobs. It's that honestly, I believe that soap opera does mirror the way women talk to each other. There's these communication patterns that have been built up through women, the world of women, okay, which was, it made sense there was a division of labor, okay? It wasn't sexism against women that there was a division of labor. The men went off to hunt and did the dangerous things. The women stayed around the hearth because you had pregnant women, nursing women, older women, okay, they were cooking and so on. So I feel that these communication patterns that we're talking about have been built up, okay, over the centuries. The men had to toughen each other, okay, to go out. You know, the hunting parties of Native Americans, you know, they could be gone for 2 weeks, and when the temperature was below zero, okay, many of them died. Okay, you know, the idea that somehow, any kind of separation of the sexes or different spheres of the sexes is inherently sexist.
And inherently driven by a power dynamic.
The answer to all of this, okay, everything that we're talking about, okay, is education into early history, okay? Until people understand the Stone Age, the nomadic period, the agrarian era, and how culture, how civilization built up, okay? In Mesopotamia, the great irrigation projects, or in Egypt, okay, where you had for the first centralized government authority became necessary, okay, to master these. You had a situation where environmentally. Difficult situation like the deserts of Mesopotamia or the peculiar character of Egyptian geography where you can only have a little tiny fertile line along the edges of the Nile, okay, an otherwise desert landscape. So this civilization and authority, okay, right, it's not necessarily about power grabbing, but about organization to achieve something for the good of the people as a whole.
That's exactly the symbolism of the great father.
By reducing all hierarchy to power, okay,
yep,
and selfish power, okay, it is utterly naive. It's ignorant, right? So I say education has to be totally reconstituted, including public education, to begin in the most distant past. So our young people today who know nothing about how the world was created that they inhabit, okay, can understand, okay, what marvelous, you know, technological yes. paradise they live in, and it's the product of capitalism, it's the product of individual innovation, it's the most of it's the product of a Western tradition that everyone wants to trash now, etc. If you begin in the past and show, and also talk about war, okay, because with the war is the one thing that wakes people up, okay, as we see. War
and
is the reality
as we
principle.
May see.
Yes, okay, war is the reality principle. My father and all, and five of my uncles went to World War II, you know, and my, you know, my father was part of the force that landed in Japan, okay, as a, you know, he was a paratrooper, you know, at the time of the Japanese surrender, okay, and all, you know, and my, a couple uncles got shot up and so on. When you have the reality of war, when people see the reality of the horrors of war, Berlin burned, and, you know, to a crisp and so on, you know, starvation, all kind, then you understand, okay, this marvelous mechanism that brings water, you know, to the kitchen, and you flip on a light, and the electricity comes.
I know. Well, for me, like, and I suppose it's because I have somewhat of a depressive temperament. I mean, one thing that staggers me on a consistent basis is the fact that anything ever works. I mean, because it's so unlikely, you know, to be in a situation where our electronic communications work, where our electric grid works, and it works all the time, right? It works 100% of the time. And the reason for that is that there are mostly men out there who are breaking themselves into pieces, repairing this thing, which just falls apart all the time.
Absolutely. Right. I said this in the Monk debate, okay, in Toronto several years ago. I said that there's the invisible, all these you know, these elitist, you know, professors yeah. sneering at men. It's men who are maintaining everything around us. Okay, this invisible army, okay, which feminists don't notice. Right, nothing would work.
Or regarded as oppressive, which is, you know, and like a professor is someone who's standing on a hill surrounded by a wall, which is surrounded by another wall, which is surrounded by another wall, like it's walls all the way down, who stands up there and says, I'm brave and independent. It's like you've got this protected area that's so unlikely. It's so absolutely unlikely. And the fact that people aren't on their knees in gratitude all the time for the fact that we have central heating and air conditioning and pure water and reliable food, it's just...
It's incredible.
It's absolutely
yes.
unbelievable.
I mean, people used to die for the water supply. Okay, was contaminated with cholera, for heaven's sakes. Right? People don't understand. Okay, they have clean water, fresh milk, fresh orange juice. All of these things. These are marvelous.
And all of the time.
All of the time. Western culture is heading. Okay, because we are so dependent on this invisible infrastructure, we're heading for an absolute catastrophe when jihadists figure out how to paralyze the power grid. The entire culture will be chaotic. You'll have mobs in the street, okay? You know, within 3 days, okay, when suddenly the food supply is interrupted and there's no way to communicate. There'll be like a robbery. I mean, that is the way Western culture is going to collapse, okay? And it won't take much. It'll just be
single
a few
points
days.
Of failure.
Because we are so interconnected,
yeah.
and now we are so dependent on communications and computers. I used to predict for years there would be an asteroid hitting the Earth.
Okay? Yeah, well, do you know how the solar flares work? So back in, this happens.
Okay, they're just giving us a heads up. What they're saying is that we're not prepared for any disaster, and they are right. We're not prepared for a solar flare that could knock out all electricity over one-third of the planet. We're not prepared for famine in the United States. We're not prepared for drought and... We're not prepared for the Arctic to melt and have the heat rise over the northern part of America, which would cause about a 4 to 5 degree increase in heat. Most people wouldn't notice that. So it's 80 and now it's 85. You know, it's 90, it's 95. But the ground does know, and the ground cannot change how it nurtures seeds and allows seeds to go into sprouts and go into grains if you have more than about 3 degree change in temperature. And so then that means a major part of our breadbasket would no longer be as fruitful as it has been. And we're unprepared for major fires. We saw it this year. Unprepared for Hurricane Category 4 over Florida. 9 million people in Florida, Floridians, had to flee and came back to devastation. And then they're not prepared. Even to this day, on my street in Florida, probably one-third of the houses have roofs that have tarpons on them. Because you have to wait a year to a year and a half to get your roof repaired. You have to wait up to a year and a half to get a new fence in. A water system might take you 6 months. There was no preparation for this. You can't have that many people devastated because you only have a handful of people. Maybe you have five roofing companies in a whole city of 300,000. But what if you have 100,000 people whose roofs are destroyed? How are five companies going to handle it? So we're just not prepared for anything. And we've taken for granted all of those people who, no matter what the hour, it could be 3 in the morning and there's a storm, someone's going to go out there and in that storm and fix your power. And first responders and people who do the things that we pay no attention to and give almost no gratitude towards. We've become so codependent upon services, and then something happens, we no longer have that service. That's what it's saying. Now, we're going to play you half of the interview that Abby Martin was doing in Israel. You'll hear one man speaking about where the rights of the Palestinians should be also explained. And then you'll hear just average people, college students and a rabbi and other people on the street, just normal citizens. And it's not to condemn them. It's not to accuse them. It's just to hear what they actually think. Because when you're isolated in America and you're not in a country that's in conflict, then you're giving thoughts about how to resolve the conflict without being there to see, is this something that the people there would accept or reject? Our goal is peace in the Middle East. Our goal is equality of quality of life for the Jews and the Palestinians. Our emphasis is no more violence to anyone. That's our goal. So now let's hear how she's being attacked everywhere because she did this interview. Abby Martin in Israel.
12th, an Israeli Knesset party approved a plan to annex all of the occupied territories that would erase Palestine completely. This is considered an extremist solution to a conflict that has spanned decades and the so-called key to peace in the Middle East. But how do Jewish Israeli citizens feel, those who are not in the government or living in illegal settlements? Last year, I traveled around the West Bank to release a series for the Empire Files on the plight of Palestinians, featuring their voices and stories. But I also went to speak to average Israelis in the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem.
We're here in Zion Square in Jerusalem, which the government has actually declared to rename Tolerance Square. And we're just going to ask everyday Israelis what they think about the situation. You're American. Where are you from and why did you come here?
I'm from New York. And I came here with my family when I was younger to make Aliyah. Because it was always my parents' dream to come to Israel because we're religious.
So are you American?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Why? When did you move here and why?
I moved here 11 years ago. My family moved here because this is the country of the Jewish people and the future of the Jewish people, and we want to be here.
How old are you guys?
18.
We're 18 years 18. Old.
Now we are here in Israel taking a leadership course, and we're going to the army for a few months to see how life's here, and then we hope to bring back some of this knowledge to our youth movements.
So you're like an internship with the army?
It's about 2 months, and they show you everything about the army.
Israel is a great place. It's a nice place. You should come and visit. I love Israel, and I feel safe here.
All the misconceptions are not true. Like, there's not people with knives every day, and there's not, people exploding.
Palestinians?
Yeah. No, but pretty much the life here is really good.
For people living here, it's just normal to see people in the army walking around with guns, and you feel completely safe and protected.
I feel like we know who the threat is, and it's not coming from anyone random, as opposed to in the rest of the world that it could be anyone. Here we know who our enemy is, and we know that they are out to get us.
Who is the enemy?
Who's the enemy? That's a very good question. I don't think it's specifically any nation. I think it's the people that are so interested in being politically correct that they won't actually go after the people that are trying to cover things up.
I think that the Islam is a very bad disease, not just for Israel, for all around the world. We can see it. They think they all have to be Islam. If you're not Islam, they will kill you.
A lot of Americans don't really understand what Israel's like. We hear a lot of things in the news. A lot of people are sympathizing with the Palestinian plight. Can you talk about what it's like to kind of live in this situation?
First of all, it's very hard. I'm in an organization. It's called Lahava. It's against the Jews shouldn't marry Arabs.
Did you say the organization was, did what again?
The organization is, the thing of it is to, that Jews shouldn't marry Arabs.
Shouldn't marry Arabs. Yeah. Why do you feel strongly about that?
Because Jews is a special nation that God gave it to the Jews, and we don't want Jews to get mixed up with together with a different nation.
I think Israelis have to take over, and they have to kick them away. It will be much better not to kill them, just to go back to Arab countries.
You can't deal with these people. There's no need to try. There's no need to talk to them. What we can do is when that they do enough harm, we retaliate. That's war, and that's the situation that any Jew lives in Israel has to deal with.
Okay. בסדר בעברית? פשוט מאוד. צריך להיכנס לשטחים. וכל מחבל שעושה פיגוע צריך להרוג אותו. צריך להרוג את המחבלים, ואז הם יפחדו ולא יעשו לנו בעיות, והכל יהיה בסדר. הם יהיו בכפרים שלהם, אנחנו נחיה פה, לא צריך להיות ביחד, והכל בסדר.
I think also that every Arab that doing a terrorism attack, we have to kill him, and not because he's an Arab, because he's a terrorist. I think you should also kick out the family, because it all begins with chinuch. How do you say it?
Education.
Whatever they teach the kids does, you know, it's families.
I'm seeing that we need to... I don't know how to translate it really well.
I think we should give them a country. If you're doing any problem, you just go in there to give them a country, and then it's going to be a war between countries, you know? If they're going to throw a rocket, we're going to throw one big one and done.
I don't think there's any answer to it.
Really?
There's only one way, like, I would carpet bomb them.
You would carpet bomb them?
It's the only way you could deal with it. Like, or try to stop them a different way. It never worked.
You mean all Arabs or Gaza or...
I believe that they, like, I hope to believe they're not, but I do think they are, because I don't trust them. You can't trust them, and that's the only way I believe that. The only way is just to stop it completely.
I think that we miserable the Arabs. Make a piguim and we need to kill the Arabs.
So. Okay.
We'll talk about this later.
All right, cool. Well,
there is also Jewish civilians that hate Arabs. Yeah, I'm not saying, but we have also people that like the Arabs and everything, like Smolanim.
I think another thing that the Jews should have rights to hate them. I think we have the right to hate them. I don't see a reason why not. I wouldn't trust any of them.
To better understand this mentality, I also talked to Ronnie Barkin, a Jewish Israeli citizen who grew up in the country and is now an ardent critic of the notion of a Jewish state.
Like anyone growing up in Israel, I went through the whole indoctrination mechanism. And we are being trained to be soldiers from kindergarten, literally from kindergarten. The moment I realized, I managed to sort of overcome that indoctrination, then everything became very clear, because the situation is crystal clear. One of the main successes of Israeli propaganda is to convince the world that the situation is complicated, but it's far from being complicated. It's probably the least complicated conflict in the world today. And it's all about basically those who have the power, those who oppress and subjugate and tread over the indigenous people of the land who have been oppressed and subjugated and expelled from their land. And this is what it's about. The situation here is not very different other than the way it is perceived in the world and among Israeli society themselves. They like to perceive themselves as being something else, as being, you know, liberal and progressive and all of that. And I also thought of myself as such until I realized that actually, no, this is not the case. The case is very clear, and I'm not on the right side of history. And that's when, you know, the moment I managed to overcome this type of brainwashing, then the rest was very easy. So this one is all about creating a place which is for one select group and only that. It's not only the fact that they wanted to take over, to usurp the land and the resources and all of that. It's also about this exclusive nature of the place, that this is ours and only ours. And even any Palestinian being born in Israel, even if they're Israeli citizens, is already regarded as some sort of a threat to the state. Mm-hmm. The need to segregate, the need to separate and not to interact with Palestinians is part of Israeli identity. So we have to understand that Israeli identity depends on denying Palestinian identity and denying either the existence of Palestinians altogether or at the very least denying their identity, their culture, and so on. And also, right after the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, right after the Palestinians were expelled from their homes and became refugees, the very next thing that happened was that there was a concerted effort of mass looting of books and other cultural artifacts from Palestinian homes, which was led by the National Library in Israel. So it's for a reason that when we say existence is resistance for Palestinians, this is true. Just by very existing on their land, this is an act of resistance in itself. Even more so when they actually claim their rights, claim their identity, do cultural work, or like produce Palestinian culture, that is an act of war.
After learning a lot in Jewish history and Israel history, I've like seen that people make a big deal out of about a lot of different areas. But if you look back, like, correct me if I'm wrong, if you look back at the history, the areas, these places are like really rightfully ours. Like, if it was any other country that would have conquered these places or taken over these places, nobody would make a big deal. It's just because it's Israel and it's anti-Semitism and everything.
They kicked us about 2,000 years ago, and we came back. We have Jerusalem. We build every stone here. Every stone, 3,000 years ago. Over here,
this all is 3,000 years.
This is the city of David.
Okay, the rest of the interview, which you can hear on our website, is pretty much the same. Virtually every single one of the people they interviewed on the street, and a lot of people, shared the same common view. Only this one person, who is an extreme minority position, held a different view. For this, Abby Martin was attacked and is kind of persona non grata. What do you think when you heard this? Was she fair? Did she impose her own thoughts? Or was she just engaged in trying to present two sides of an issue? Our talkback number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We're going to take a quick break. We're coming back with Professor Ellen Brown, and then we're going to go to your calls. So what do you think of this? This kind of censorship and attack against the messenger on this one. Stay with us, please. A lot more to go.
You must be a special lady.
Don't you sing in first, second, or second?
No, Harry, I'm singing second, man.
And a very exciting girl.
I'll bring that bass out, man.
Hey, man, I'll bring it out a little bit more.
You gotta be a special lady.
Let's get down on some harmony, come on.
Cause you got me sitting on top of the world. Sitting on top of the world.
We're going out to Los Angeles. We're standing by as Professor Ellen Brown. She's an economist and an attorney and founder of Public Banking Institute. And she ran as the Green Party candidate for California State Treasurer, and she's written extensively about the private financial cartels and the Federal Reserve. Her book is The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity. And she has a program on the Progressive Radio Network. It's called It's Our Money, every Wednesday at 3 p.m. And her site is ellenbrown.com. Nice to have you with us, Ellen.
Oh, nice to talk to you, Gary.
Last week, the European Union approved the merger of two of the world's agrochemical giants that dominate the GMO and pesticide herbicide market, Monsanto and Bayer. This will give new corporate entity huge dominance over global agriculture, and worse, and joins two of the largest proprietary portfolios of chemical and crop genetic research into a monopoly. And already Monsanto and Bayer own the world's most used agrochemical products like glyphosate or Roundup and Bayer's class of neonicotinoid pesticides that have associated with the dramatic decrease in honeybee and other pollinators and bird populations. Now, although the Department of Justice has approved the $60-plus billion merger, it's now left up to Trump. But Trump's record so far with other agrochemical mergers like DowDuPont and later Syngenta and ChemChina signal he will likely say yes to it. And it will be the largest merger since that of AT&T and Time Warner. Now, since we have covered the issue of the environmental and human health threats of Monsanto's Roundup and Bayer's neonicotinoid chemicals in the past, just give us a newsmaker overview of why this is not a good idea and what it's likely to do to the prices of food, food access, and the future food security. The form is yours.
Well, between the two of them, they are killing the insects and the birds, and of course, they're poisoning us. Well, I mean, first of all, they will reduce the productivity of the farmland, as they are doing. But contrary to popular belief, where most people think you've got to use these pesticides in order to keep away the insects. In fact, there's been studies showing that the neonicotinoids actually make productivity go down because they are killing off the insects and bees that are necessary to pollinate the plants. So not only will productivity go down, but they will, as you say, have a monopoly. They already virtually have a monopoly on seeds and pesticides, and so they can make the prices be whatever they want. I mean, I think there are two other big, huge conglomerates that between the three of them, they control the whole global market. So you don't even have to call it a cartel. I mean, they don't have to meet behind closed doors and decide to set prices. They can just, you know, it's a wink and a nod, and they can just all move their prices up together, and nobody can do much about it because there aren't any seed companies and pesticide companies in competition that can outcompete them.
Monsanto and Bayer's argument is that the merger will boost agricultural research and innovation, and they have managed to convince government legislators that this is crucial in order to double the plant's food supply in the near future when we have more people. Why shouldn't we believe this?
Well, why should we believe it? Why did they say that they're merging together will make it more increase productivity? Do you know? I mean, it makes no sense to me that the more you cartelize, the more you consolidate and have a monopoly. It doesn't seem to me that helps the planet. We certainly have been brought up on capitalist principles where you need competition in order to manage prices, come out with better products. And beyond that, I think the greatest threat is just to our health. I mean, not even counting money. It's a matter of, will we have a planet that has life on it? If we're killing off the insects, they've been here longer than any other species. Well, not counting funguses and such. So
I would agree with
that.
In fact, the reports and comments from small American farmers would indicate they're terrified. For those farmers who rely on agrochemical industrial farming methods, they fear costs will jeopardize their livelihoods. And for farmers using traditional non-chemical-based farming methods or who have gone organic, the merger signals further consolidation and takeover of the nation's farmland by the larger industrial farm corporations, and also that means that they'll be more likely to influence an already politicized USDA, which allow them to have labeled as organic foods that are grown on soil that is human waste laden, where amounts of arsenic and lead would be allowed in there, and even different pesticides would be allowed and still call it organic. So I'm very concerned. I look forward to you keeping us up to date on this, and this merger for all of us should be of concern.
Right. Well, that is another major concern, is that the bigger they get, the more money they've got, and so they lobby, and they've got all these agencies are captured by the big corporations. Somehow we need to break those up. And we used to have antitrust that forbade such unions, and now we just seem to encourage them, as if, I suppose, our president is relating to Monsanto as us, and that you've got to encourage this big business, which is an American business. But it's been highly controversial for decades. In fact, funnily enough, Bayer and Monsanto merged in the 60s earlier, and at that time it was because Bayer had such a bad name that it was being rescued by Monsanto, ironically, because Bayer was then had been part of IG Farben, which was Hitler's, or, you know, the big chemical.
They made the Zykon B gas.
Yes, yeah. they made
the
poisonous chemicals, and those became, yes. Are you running out of time?
Thank you very much for being with us. Ellen Brown, and now we're going to go over and listen to our audience give us their talk back on the clip I paid of Abby Martin. Let's say hello to Bill from New Jersey. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. That was an interesting topic you covered, but it's one I've been aware of forever. I suspect I've got some Native American in me, so I'm familiar with Indian country and what they've had to endure, the Holocaust of North America. I know you know about this stuff. And it seems to me like what's going on in Israel and Palestine in that area is still the same thing that went on over here when the Europeans got here, just expanding the borders and taking land. And if you resisted, you're a terrorist. I could be wrong. I haven't been to Israel. But I am familiar with what the Indians have had to endure and continue to this day. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Of course I understand what you're saying. There is the idea is that if you want to have peaceful coexistence with anyone, you have to ask, are their needs being met? Are their essential needs being met, as yours are? In any relationship, if you have one that is dominant and one that is subverted, you're not going to have equality, and therefore there'll be conflict. Just as if we don't bring in the peacemakers, we should have the religious leaders from around the world representing all religions sit in conference with the religious leaders, because much of this is not just political, it's religious. Their interpretation of who owns the land, who has the right to land, and their right to return, the Exodus, the changing of history, the Balfour Declaration of who got what and why, the advent of Zionism, all of these should be discussed in an open, honest way by people who are not looking to punish or shame the other. If you start off any negotiation by blaming the other, then shaming the other, then you've already created a polarized duality. And from that, no one is going to easily acknowledge your position. They're going to resist it. Then they're going to form their own blame and shame of you. Now you got two people arguing, and arguments are not how you get to a solution. You have discussion without pathologizing the temperament, personality, religion, or actions of the other person. At some point, if you don't come to a resolution, you will then create what you fear most. But in this case, you have some people running the Israeli government who do not, in my opinion, do not see coexistence with the Palestinian people as their ultimate goal. And they have enormous control, inordinate control, far more control than any other lobbying organization or group, dwarfing the NRA. And so Every single legislator, every single member of the Senate votes unanimously, no matter what Israel chooses to do. Now, if Israel was always doing the right thing, you might understand that. But you don't determine that someone's right before you see their actions. You don't say you get a pass and you get to get out of being criticized and then go ahead and do the very thing that you should have been criticized for. And the same is true for the Palestinians. You have to have the people who have the real interest of everyone. If a Palestinian comes to negotiate, they better understand, you better be thinking what it means to be the Jew who fears you, and to show him that your actions, your tolerance, your acceptance, their right to live is equal to your own. Otherwise, you've created a polarity. And the same is true for the Jew. And I just do not feel that we have spiritually evolved people engaged in the peace process. We have political ideologues supported by special interest groups and a mindset, an ideological mindset of militarism, the war on this and the war on that. And what you get with on everything, well, look at the war on drugs, look at the war on terror, look at the war on poverty, look at the war on homelessness. And what is the end game? Medical Vietnams, social Vietnams, economic Vietnams? It's not the way to approach something. And I do not believe that Abby Martin, who is an extraordinarily conscientious, Rachel Maddow isn't even the same universe of integrity and quality when it comes to Abby Martin. And if you want to take issue with how she reports something, or if she shows bias in her reporting, take that up. But if not, her right to report on issues showing both sides, in fact, the majority of the issue was shown on the Israeli side, then something is wrong with us if we are not allowing information to be offered us to which we can reject it or accept it. Otherwise, we're engaging in censorship. Thank you for your call. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.